Great. We're now moving into our second session, which is on measuring and modeling CO2 and temperature and other factors and other effects. And the first paper is David here? Yes, good. Right. Is by several co-authors, David Fleischer, Dennis Timlin, Raja Reddy, Vanjamala Reddy, Yang Young, and Soo Young Kim. And David Fleischer from USDA ARS is going to present. And we now know that also if you need a pointer,
shake it to get the pointer. Okay, great. Thank you. Well, thank you, Cynthia and Daniel, for the opportunity to present some of our research. I changed the title slightly from what was in the brochure to just focus on sunlit growth chambers, which was a picture up here, and I'll give a description shortly. The reason being that there's just a ton of information, and I think we're better served just to focus for 15 minutes anyway just on CO2 and temperature responses with one type of chamber. There is a forthcoming book chapter from this research, and we'll have a little bit more in-depth discussion. The other kind of caveat I put out here is most of the background from our group is a modeling perspective. And so a lot of the data I'm going to show is quantitative in nature. And for the 15 minutes, I think it made more sense to look at more of the experimental studies and the modeling approaches. But I will have a section in the forthcoming chapter that focuses more on the modeling. So with that out of the way, we heard some really excellent discussions this morning about the need for doing this kind of research for climate change studies. And I just want to throw a couple of my own two cents into this. And one of the issues is there's a disconnect among looking at different disciplines of research into agricultural issues related to climate change. And what's really needed is a multidisciplinary approach so we can maximize resources both from a funding perspective and also from a discipline perspective and tackle both projected changes in climate and develop climate-ready crops. And from our perspective is to develop integrative tools such as crop models and other systems that we can use to address these issues with agricultural systems. So why do we do research in controlled environments? One of the main reasons is that we can help limit confounding among different environmental factors. Like, for example, if you do field research, you know temperature and radiation profiles are highly correlated together. Same thing with if you want to do nutrient studies and follow the response to single nutrients, it's tied in closely with the soil characteristics. So from a modeling perspective, doing experiments in growth chambers helps us develop process-level quantitative data where we can look at potential responses to one individual factor at a time. And some of the areas that we've looked at are quantifying these different cultural environmental factors on different issues. The chambers we use lets us look at entire growth season studies for different crops. We've looked at quantitative data for root and canopy growth, development, sink source relationships, carbon partitioning, and also leaf level physiological responses. And again, our goal has been to develop primarily to develop algorithms and parameters for our crop growth models. Real briefly, this is a slide showing one of the sunlit controlled environment chamber facilities. This one happens to be in Beltsville. Some of the other co-authors have facilities in Mississippi State. And this is showing our bigger sunlit chambers. The major aspects of these is that they contain about a cubic meter of soil volume. And we can see here we have a student doing some root tracings. They are semi-closed systems. They're completely closed, but they're semi-closed with respect to carbon dioxide. So each chamber has its own dedicated infrared gas analyzer. We monitor whole planetary gas exchange responses. We've got complete control over most of the environmental factors like temperature, humidity to a certain extent, irrigation, fertilizer. And then there are also additional systems in this facility that helps us measure leakage rates so we can maintain the accuracy. So what I want to do briefly over the next couple of minutes is just kind of give a survey for representative crops. A couple C3 crops and then one C4 crop. And sort of arbitrarily, I divided this up into two areas. One is looking at gas exchange responses and dry matter production. And then towards the end, I'll talk about developmental effects. Real briefly again, sort of the state of the knowledge with CO2 and temperature responses to gas exchange and dry matter production. Generally for C3 plants, the effect of CO2 on biomass and yield is positive, although there is some conflicts. And C4 generally don't respond to elevated CO2, but again, there are some more areas in literature that there's some conflicts in literature about that. Less is known regarding interactions of CO2 and temperature on growth. From a modeling perspective, the magnitude and the way to quantify the effects of these interactions on daily canopy carbon assimilation rates or net assimilation rates over the season and how they're affected by other factors like water stress and nitrogen We need to have more quantitative data for this, both to develop our models and also to test some of the relative responses. And the same holds true with transpiration and energy balances. And then again, look at differences in quantitative responses for C3 and C4 crops. So going through a survey then of some representative studies that were done in these chambers, here's looking at soybean, which is a C3 crop, and this is just a response to CO2. This is showing canopy photosynthetic rate, gross photosynthesis, versus days after emergence. The top, the two lines, one set of plants were grown at ambient CO2, the other elevated. This was the ambient study and the elevated study. And so clearly you see throughout the season that there's a higher response to elevated CO2. Some of the fluctuation from day to day is due to developmental stage, and both the responses were quite similar with the different CO2 levels. The other source of variation, of course, is the aging of the canopy and also differences in daily light integral. I don't show this for soybean, but I'll show it for some other crops, but generally the positive response we see in gas exchange to elevated CO2 is reflected in the dry matter production. But this doesn't, the proportion of that carbon that goes towards the yield or fruiting organs is not necessarily in the same proportion to the total mass, and I'll show that with soybean. I'll show that with cotton. And this is our next slide. This actually was an interactive study with CO2 and temperature. This is looking at light response curves for gross photosynthesis. This was taken at 64 days after emergence, although similar responses were seen throughout the whole season. So each of these graphs is soybean grown at, cotton grown at different temperatures. This is a 2012 temperature, 25-17 day-night, 30-22, and 35-27. And in all four cases, there was a positive response, again, to CO2 at all growth temperatures. These lines were significantly different. What we can see is the response tends to be emphasized, or it's increased by where the temperature had the largest effect on the growth, which tended to be at the highest temperature. And so as you grow colder, the growth temperature tends to be more limiting on the response than the CO2 level. And I'll show you in a minute the daily assimilation, or the dry matter production. First, this is looking at transpiration rates. Again, the same type of curve. This was transpiration measured from the canopy at 62 days after emergence. And the bottom line, it's a little bit hard to see for the cooler temperature, but the bottom line is the elevated CO2 response. So transpiration was reduced by elevated CO2. And as temperature dropped again, that reduction was smaller, but it was still significantly less for elevated CO2 plants. And as a result, you had increased water use efficiency both on a daily basis and seasonal for cotton that were grown at elevated CO2. And then the dry matter partitioning followed the same trends. This is now looking at different aspects or different components of dry matter allocation. On the x-axis is the temperature study, and then on the y is the amount of grams allocated to each plant. Just focus here, this is the whole plant dry matter production. The top curve here is the elevated CO2 again, and the bottom is ambient. So you can see this did follow the canopy gross photosynthetic responses. And clearly the biggest effect was at the temperatures that were most effective or tended to produce the most growth. So the other point I want to mention is looking at the bowls and squares. These are the fruiting organs of the cotton plant. And clearly, although you saw an increase in total dry matter, you didn't see that increase necessarily translated into the fruiting organs. And so that's another issue that needs to be teased out, is that carbon allocation effect with elevated CO2. We did also have a series of potato studies that we've done. This particular study didn't look at CO2 interactions with temperature. This was CO2 and response to water stress. The curves we're looking at, this is, again, canopy gross photosynthetic rate. This happens to be versus weeks after emergence. The top curve is ambient, plants grown at ambient CO2 at three different irrigation levels. The bottom is at elevated. If I were to superimpose these on top of each other, you'd see at any given irrigation amount that the CO2 response, the elevated plants that are grown at elevated CO2 had a higher photosynthetic response. And this was consistent throughout most of the season. I don't show this for potato, but we saw it with cotton that net assimilation and dry matter allocation was always positive for elevated CO2 plants. And what was interesting was with elevated CO2, there was more, the relative fraction of carbon that got proportioned to tubers actually increased as water stress increased. So as irrigation decreased, you had more allocation to the tubers, which was a pretty interesting response to the elevated CO2. As with cotton, this is a transpiration response. This happens to be at 45 days after emergence. Again, the bottom line here is the elevated CO2 responses. This is a diurnal pattern. And again, transpiration rates were smaller at a given irrigation level for plants grown under elevated CO2. And as a result, at the end of the season, water use efficiency was consistently higher for elevated CO2 plants as well. Moving now into a C4 plant, this was studies that we had done with maize. This was a temperature and CO2 interaction. This is one graph that was taken from 29 days after planting, but again, the similar relations held true throughout the whole season. So there was a 19-degree study, a 31-degree study, and a 38.5-degree day temperature study. And the open and closed circles represent ambient and elevated CO2 respectively. And you can see here there's no difference in CO2 effect at any growth temperature on canopy photosynthetic rate. Obviously, there's a big effect on temperature because of leaf air production, but CO2 didn't affect that response. The bottom graph is just showing the same information. It's just picking off data that was taken at PAR levels greater than 1,800 micromoles. And I don't show that slide again, but the dry matter and carbon allocation, leaf air production, were not influenced by CO2, which is consistent with what we see for this graph here. We also did some measurements of leaf level gas exchange. You can clearly see for leaf net photosynthetic rate versus temperature, there's no effect of CO2. However, elevated CO2 did decrease stomatal conductance at a given temperature, as well as transpiration. And one of the results of this is that you tend to have a higher leaf level temperature. We actually did measure this at the top leaves in the canopy. During the midday, this is about a half a degree higher. However, this we'll show you later in the talk, there actually was no effect on developmental rates, despite that slightly higher temperature. There also was not the temperature dependence of the different physiological parameters that we used to characterize photosynthesis and leaf level gas exchange weren't influenced by CO2. And then this is a different study, but also with maize. This is transpiration for one of the days after emergence. And again, as with the C3 crops, you did see a reduction in transpiration with elevated CO2. So you had an increase in water use efficiency. Moving briefly into some developmental responses. Again, the state of the knowledge, generally, growth temperature effects are really well known and characterized for most developmental responses for most plants. It's not as well known as the interaction with temperature and CO2 and other factors as well. We know that generally, plants grown under elevated CO2 have reduced leaf stomatal conductance, which tends to increase leaf temperature. And there's some discussion, you know, does that actually influence developmental rate? If you've got a higher leaf temperature, what properties will that influence? And also, there's some evidence that plants grown under elevated CO2 have a higher carbon status inside the plant. And there's some indication that affects the sink-source balancing inside the plant as well, and that can affect carbon allocation. So the next few minutes, I just kind of address a couple aspects of development. This is no way comprehensive, but just to give you an idea of some of the things that we've looked at. Leaf initiation or appearance rate in the canopy. This is for cotton, and this was a CO2 and temperature interaction study. This is looking at leaf initiation rate at different growth temperatures for different branches. So this is just looking at an ambient CO2 case, and you can see the strong nonlinear temperature response. Over here, this is the effects at different growth stages of CO2. And at any growth stage, there was not a significant effect of CO2 on leaf initiation in the canopy. For potato, this actually, we did a CO2 and temperature study looking at leaf initiation rates in potato. This is leaf appearance rate versus daily 24-hour temperature. This is three different data sets. For the most part, there was no effect of CO2. However, at the highest growth temperature, we did see a slight increase in leaf appearance rate with the highest temperature. And so there does appear to be an elevated CO2 response. At least it seems to shift the maximum response to growth temperature for potato, at least at about a 31-degree study. But there was no other effect aside from that one point. Looking at corn, and this was consistent with what we talked about earlier, there was no influence of CO2 on leaf appearance rate or final leaf number in the plant. And this is showing similar response just using the Fowler Crown Index. Another developmental issue is looking at leaf expansion rates. This is going back to the cotton example. Just looking at this top curve here, this is the final leaf area of individual leaves in the canopy. And this is versus growth temperature. So you can clearly see the nonlinear response to temperature. The two curves were ambient elevated CO2, and there was a significant response that leaves were actually slightly longer with the elevated CO2. And this increase in size occurred, was more emphasized as leaf temperature also increased. And in cotton, the whole canopy had a larger leaf area with elevated CO2, and this was largely due to these individual leaves being larger, but also this sort of source-sink relationship that I mentioned, that there actually were more leaves produced per branch under the elevated CO2 study. Looking at potato, this is individual leaf size or leaf area versus growth temperature, and the bottom curve here is ambient and the top is elevated. So first you can see the nonlinear effect, and potato prefers cooler temperatures, so you can see the leaves are much bigger at colder temperatures, but again, the size is pronounced by CO2, particularly at growth temperatures that are most favorable to growth. Unlike cotton, however, canopy leaf area was not always increased by elevated CO2, and a big part of this was there was not always the same amount of branching. In some cases, we actually had less branching with potato and elevated CO2. And I think there's a strong influence on nutrition when we look at some of these interactions that has to be investigated. For corn, this is leaf expansion again. There were no effects in any growth temperature. You can see the temperature effects, but again, no CO2 effect on that. Okay. So just kind of summarizing, a lot more developmental effects, which I'll talk about in the manuscripts. There in cotton, stem height and elongation rates were slightly increased by elevated CO2. Potato, there were some mixed results, and again, there's nutritional effects that need to be investigated. Some straight-up developmental responses like flowering and tuber initiation, there was no measured CO2 effect for cotton and potato. The idea of increased sink strength in cotton with elevated CO2 had more squares and more bowls. Potato actually had increased tuber numbers and tuber yield, particularly as water stress increased in that particular study. So there are other research areas, which I'll just kind of throw this up here. We've done studies with water stress. We're still looking at fertilization interactions with CO2. Our colleague at Mississippi State's done some UVB interactions. We've done some molecular biology and enzymatic responses as well, which we'll talk about. And then there are other factors to be researched. And, of course, there'll be some discussion on simulation and modeling in the chapter as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much.